Welcome to Listen to Your Heart, an in-depth discussion in layman's terms about cardiological conditions, preventions, and treatments. I'm your host, Scott Clow, and in each episode, we will speak with a cardiologist from Jackson Cardiology Consultants based in Jackson, Michigan. Our goal with each and every conversation is to make complicated conditions and medical terms comprehensible. This is Listen to Your Heart, a production of McKibben Media Group and distributed by WKHM. Episode 1. So, you've got CAD. In this episode, I had a chance to sit down and have an in-depth discussion with Dr. Tarek Bagul, cardiologist with Jackson Cardiology Consultants. Our topic, which I will mispronounce several times throughout the course of this episode, is coronary arterial disease.
This is a very common problem nowadays because of lack of healthy diet, lack of exercise habits, lack of adherence to good guidelines. What I mean by that is coronary artery disease does not happen overnight. It happens, is an insidious problem. It happens over many years. It starts with the buildup of these plaques.
The bad plaques, lead to the angry platelets.
Correct.
Okay.
And that plaques can happen anywhere. Can happen in the arteries of the heart, and this is coronary artery disease. They can happen in the aorta. They can happen in the legs, causing what we call peripheral arterial disease or blockages in the legs, or can happen in the brain or the arteries that supply the brain. So back to the coronary artery disease, obviously plaques gets to happen more in patients who have risk factors.
So what are those risk factors?
So risk factors are mainly consist of family history of heart disease.
Heart disease seems so broad, doctor. I'm sorry, but it seems like such a broad term. I get that question when I'm filling out, say I'm going to a new physician. Do you have a history of heart disease?
When we refer to that, in that context, we're referring to any patients having heart attacks or having stents or having coronary artery bypass surgery at any point in time.
Okay.
And that probably becomes more significant if the person develops a problem at an early age. And that at that point in time is considered premature family history of coronary artery disease. That premature is defined by females below age 65 or males below age 55.
So being 44 years old right now,
yes,
am I at risk?
Well, at risk if you have some risk factors, yes. But as a male, you have one risk factor.
And yes. That's I'm a male?
Yes.
Okay. So you see this condition mostly in males. Prudent then to have my blood pressure checked? Is that an early indication of maybe I have some concerns when it comes to CAD?
That's absolutely correct. Hypertension is one of the significant risk factors for heart disease, and a lot of patients are asymptomatic, meaning no symptoms. They would have high blood pressure and they feel fine until this problem is picked up by a physician, and then the treatment is initiated. The high blood pressure problem is it can lead to significant drastic effects on the heart. It can promote what you call this atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries of the heart. It will lead to what we call hypertensive heart disease, meaning the heart being a pump. It cannot. It would try to compensate for this increased stress by increasing the wall thickness, and this is called hypertrophy or left ventricular hypertrophy, and that eventually will lead to significant effects on the heart in terms of increased stiffness of the heart. The patient will start to become more shorter breath, and at the end of the spectrum, the heart will not be able to cope anymore with this increased stress. At that point in time, heart failure would happen.
So let's say I'm referred to you, and my family physician has said, you know what, I'm concerned that you have coronary artery disease. Mm-hmm. Is this fatal? When you hear something, when you hear disease, you think I'm done. That's it.
No, it's not. It depends on the severity of the problem.
How long you've let it go.
Yes, how long did it go, what are the risk factors, and how advanced is the problem? So patients who have mild to moderate coronary artery disease will live their life without having any issues, without any significant effect on the overall prognosis.
But there's no necessarily, you can't come in with coronary artery disease and you give me, all right, here's your diet. You do this, you do this, you do that. I'm thinking of type 2 diabetes. Mm. I call it voluntary diabetes, where you can go in, you have it, and if you address your lifestyle, it's gone.
Correct.
Is that something you can do with CAD?
Yes. So obviously, you know, it is hard to have these plaques go away once they develop, but as long as you, even if plaques happen and you have mild to moderate coronary artery disease, if the plaques remain stable, as we discussed with this fibrous cap being stable, patients will have no symptoms and can lead a healthy life without having any symptoms or any significant bad prognostic effects in the future. So, yes, patients with mild up to moderate coronary artery disease can live a healthy life as long as they can take care of the risk factors that will prevent further progression, meaning hypertension, diabetes, smoking, and diet.
You say that stress is one of those factors. So you can lead a very clean living. You don't smoke, you eat well, but you've got some stress issues. Can that, just the stress alone, affect your heart?
Stress alone can affect the heart in terms of making these plaques unstable, yes.
Okay.
Alone.
And can that lead then to
heart attacks?
But what about the coronary artery disease? Can the stress itself alone lead to that?
Yes, it can. Stress for a short period of time will not be a bad problem, but when you're exposed to long-term stress, this is when some hormones, or what we call stress hormones, are released from the adrenal gland, the gland that sits on top of the kidneys, and that will lead to significant increase of cortisol production. Cortisol is called the stress hormone. And when that cortisol increases in the bloodstream, it will lead to increase in the sugar, increase of the high blood pressure, fluid retention, a lot of bad effects. And long-term increased levels of this cortisol obviously will lead to diabetes, hypertension, obesity, the appetite will increase. A lot of bad dietary habits will follow that.
So if we're going in terms of a scale from 1 to 10, I come in with moderate. We've discussed that. We're at 1. What if I'm in the 4 to 6 range as far as
coronary arteries?
Yes.
So, again, the moderate, you know, obviously you are at a much more advanced stage, but still you have not missed the boat. You can still circumvent the progression of the problem by modifying these risk factors. I cannot emphasize more the importance of taking care of these risk factors. Obviously, when you get to that point, there are depending on the progression of the problem, you would have to be on some medical therapy to prevent progression.
So would that be, I always hear people talk about blood pressure medication. Is that one of the medications that you'd put me on? And I know that's a broad term,
right?
Blood pressure medication.
Yes, blood pressure medication obviously will be prescribed, if we document that your blood pressure is not up to the guidelines. Usually we go by an optimal pressure of 130 over 80 millimeters mercury. If we document that the blood pressure is most of the time higher than that, whether it's higher than the 130 millimeters mercury systolic or 80 millimeters mercury diastolic, that eventually will lead to initiation of the treatment. And we have lots of medications that we can use to target the blood pressure depending on the other comorbidities or medical issues that the patient have. So hypertension is one of them. Obviously, we need to address the cholesterol problem. You know, we have to get that LDL, the bad cholesterol.
What does LDL stand for?
It's low density lipoprotein. And that's the bad guy. This is the, especially the oxidized form of this LDL is the one that gets deposited in the intima or in the cell, in the cells that line the artery from inside. And the more oxidized of the LDL, the higher level of this LDL, the higher the risk of having more plaques and more blockages.
And then you get angry platelets.
Yes.
The whole goal is to stay away
from angry platelets.
You don't want to upset the platelets.
Absolutely.
Once that happens.
Yes.
All right. So now we covered that 4 to 6 range. And now let's say you have someone comes in at the 7 to 10 range.
Right. So now, obviously, this is a different ball game. Now you need to upscale your therapy in terms of when that happens, most likely patient will start to have symptoms. And symptoms will consist of angina, chest pains. Angina refers to chest pains or shortness of breath. Or a lot of times arrhythmias can happen, palpitations, fast heart rates.
Arrhythmia, isn't that where the heart rate isn't necessarily consistent? It lacks consistency, or am I thinking?
No.
What is arrhythmia?
Arrhythmia refers to, so normal heart rate should be between 60 and 100 beats per minute. And
Resting heart rate?
That's resting heart rate.
Okay.
And that rhythm should be regular, that regularity of the heart rate depends on normal function of the pacemaker of the heart. So whenever, either if you have a fast heart rate, meaning heart rate more than 100, or heart rate below 60, that by itself is considered arrhythmia of the heart. But that's not a bad arrhythmia.
Okay.
When we refer to arrhythmias of the heart, we refer to more malignant arrhythmias. And these malignant arrhythmias are irregular heartbeat, when the heart rhythm become irregular, and that can be a problem. And the most common of which that we have to address is atrial fibrillation, atrial flutter. Sometimes we can have what we call supraventricular tachycardia and ventricular tachycardia. These are the arrhythmias that can be a problem.
So if I have a severe case of coronary artery disease, are we looking at surgery? Are we looking at high doses of medication? What type of treatment then can someone that has a severe, they've let it go long enough, or they just haven't noticed it. Perhaps maybe they've been obese their entire life and they become accustomed to being short of breath and
right,
and dealing with some of those symptoms, but suddenly there's an event that happens and they're referred to you. What is it that you do to improve the quality of life for someone that has let their heart health go to this extreme?
Right. So at this point in time, we're going to try to minimize the symptoms, trying to stop the progression at that point by giving some standard therapy or guidelines-directed medical therapy to those patients with advanced coronary artery disease. And these medications would include something called beta blockers. These are medications that would help minimize the stress on the heart. Statins, which are cholesterol-lowering drugs, and they have an anti-inflammatory drug. So they stabilize these plaques and prevent progression of these plaques from stable plaques to heart attacks, plus aspirin. baby aspirin. At that point would be a good idea to do, and depending on the other, whether you have other symptoms like chest pains or shortness of breath, we can add water pills like what we call diuretics and
many of these sound
ACE inhibitors. Yeah.
Non-invasive. I mean, they just sound as though it's
yes.
it's very low impact as far as
yes.
what's going into your body.
Yes, they are usually a lot of these medications. Remember, they have been in the market for a long, long time. They have been well studied. They have very low side effect profile, so they should not lead to any significant issues.
And a lot of them, the beta blockers and the baby aspirin are available over the counter. With the exception of the baby blockers, but the baby aspirin.
The baby aspirin, yes. Yes, baby aspirin, yes. So obviously, you know, yes, we have to be careful here. Yes, we have low side effect profile, but any patient who is on these medications should be monitored closely by a cardiologist and
certainly.
The primary care physician, because obviously, you know, things can change. Blood pressure can drop too low, can be very high. Lipids can be, again, not well controlled by the medication, or the medication can lead to side effects. Sometimes you can have liver issues from these medications. You know, you can have muscle aches, what we call myopathy, as a side effect of these statins. So it is a good idea to always follow up regularly with the cardiologist once you are on these medications to monitor for side effects and monitor that you are on a good regimen.
To that, if you've gotten to the point where you have severe coronary artery disease, chances are there are other health issues that go along with that. How closely do you work with other physicians and specialists that are treating a patient of yours sure. to ensure that the medications that you're taking don't have a crossover or have ill effects?
Yes. So, for example, when I see my patients, every single time I see my patients, I go over the medication list. Because sometimes what I see in my computer might differ from what the patient is actually taking. If I have any question, I would always have very low threshold to discuss with the primary care physician about the medications, and furthermore, discuss with the endocrinologist who is treating the diabetes and other physicians. So mainly I deal with the endocrinologists who are managing the diabetes and the primary care physicians.
So we've covered the different levels of coronary artery disease. As we're recording this, it's October 2nd of 2020. And many of the things that you've discussed, bad diet, sedentary lifestyle, no physical activity. We've gone through 6 months of people being isolated at home, isolating in place and quarantining in place. Do you foresee a dramatic rise in heart conditions as a result? The COVID-15 is something everyone talks about, and now it's turning into the COVID-25 because people have become so accustomed to not being active.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with you with this, because sedentary lifestyle has a significant drastic impact on the well-being of people. And lack of activity, eating unhealthy eating habits, lack of exercise has tremendous impact. As we discussed before, when you are stressed out, whether we have financial stress, whether we have emotional stress or physical stress,
you've just talked about pretty much yeah. what everyone's feeling right now.
Yes. So that essentially will lead to a lot of hormonal changes, as we discussed, that cortisol will start to increase, you know, the inflammatory markers in the blood will in the bloodstream will go up, leading to these plaques. The triglycerides, the fat in the blood will go up, the good cholesterol will go down, the sugar will start to rise. You know, a lot of times that slow rise of the sugar can lead to a tremendous impact on incidence of heart attacks. Believe it or not, patients who have what we call this metabolic syndrome or a pre-diabetic stage would be at a significant increased risk of coronary events, meaning heart attacks. That number can go up to 14 times. Patients who have metabolic syndrome, or meaning borderline high sugar, a little bit of high triglycerides, low HDL, being overweight, have at least 12 to 14 times increased risk of having heart attacks. So that again, along with the increased risk of diabetes. But that to me, that increased risk of heart attacks is really, really very, very high.
People have become very accustomed to ordering in, sitting down, not working out, with the gyms closed as long as they were. The gyms have reopened and they're not as busy as they were before. There's a saying out there with how do you eat an elephant? And it's one bite at a time. Mm. So for those people that are at risk because of a new lifestyle they've adapted as a result of COVID-19 and quarantining in place, what steps can they take in order to avoid coronary artery disease or any other heart abnormality?
Well, the first step that should be done is start to exercise. That's the first step.
But should they dive right into exercise, or we've talked about being referred to you.
Right.
But if you're concerned, you can go right to Jackson Cardiology or a cardiologist and say, I have concerns. I'd like to start an exercise regimen, but I'd like to talk to you first.
Right. Yeah. Yes. That would be actually a very good point. You know, and before you start vigorous exercise programs, I think it would be prudent to make sure that all the problems have been taken care of. Specifically, the hypertension, high blood pressure, sugar, and lipids. And obviously, and the other thing that we have to emphasize on is the tobacco dependence, smoking. That is a really, really big thing. You know, a lot of patients, I always tell my patients that before we discuss about weight loss and exercise, I would like you to, number one, to quit smoking. Trust me, quitting smoking will have a tremendous impact on the overall well-being of the patient.
From cardiology to pulmonary health.
Cardiology, cardiovascular disease risk will decrease. Stroke rate will decrease. Cancer, incidence of cancer, you know, from the lips to the bottom will decrease. As you know, all the cancers that have been described affecting all the organs from the lips down to the bottom have been associated with tobacco dependence. So a lot of health benefits to gain from quitting smoking. Number one, followed by adherence to good diet and exercise. And you made a good point that before we start doing vigorous exercise programs, I think it would be a good idea to follow up with the cardiologist.
And I think a lot of that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is contingent upon your age and your prior level of activity. When I was in my teens, I could fall down, get right back up again. When I was in my 20s, it took me maybe half a step longer to get back up. In my 30s, it was when I started having to do an inventory of everything, making sure all the fingers, toes, arms, legs, and everything were there. Now that I'm in my 40s, I'm noticing that if I fall, it takes a lot longer to get up than it used to. And I bring that up because in my 20s, working out was very easy. In my 30s, dropping weight was very easy. I could drop 20 pounds in 2 months just through diet and exercise. In my 30s, it became a little more difficult. Now that I'm in my 40s, my mid-40s, I can't shed a pound in a week like I used to be able to. And I find myself wanting to immediately go back into a workout regimen that I did in my 30s or even my early 40s. And I find myself exhausted now and close to injuring myself.
So I think you bring up a very good point. As we get older, our metabolism would start to slow down. And no matter how much you eat, if you are not doing the exercise, you know, you're going to start weight gain. So therefore, you know, as we get older, we have to compensate for this decrease or slowing of the metabolism by doing few things. One is watching the diet, you know, cutting down, cutting back on the portions, and increasing, or I would say, improving the quality of the food that we eat. In terms of high protein, low fat, low salt, low sugar. Along with that, exercise. So when you exercise, not only you are, you know, spending more calories and, you know, therefore, you know, avoiding gaining weight, but at the same time, you are speeding up your metabolism. So your body will be much more efficient in dealing with these calories that you are consuming every day.
How often do you find that people are incredibly nervous when they walk into any doctor's office and their blood pressure? Do you take into consideration the nerves that are there when someone's going to the doctor?
Yes. You know, there is actually, it's well-documented condition called white coat hypertension. When patient is anxious just being in the physician's office, you know, seeing that this professional coming with the white coat and with the scrubs and, oh, what is he going to do to me now? What's going to happen? That will alone, make your pressure go up. So anxiety is the fight or flight response, will go up, that epinephrine, norepinephrine levels will go up, and that will obviously affect your pressure. So usually what I do, when I take my patient's blood pressure, and if it is high, I don't base decisions on one reading. I ask my patient, okay, don't worry, relax, nothing, don't worry, maybe you're just being in the office. Please go ahead and, do a blood pressure diary and check your pressure twice a day, morning and at night. Document these readings for me and show it to me when you come back. That really what has the what established the basis on which we can decide whether to prescribe medications or not.
Doctor, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Listen to Your Heart with Dr. Tarek Bagal of Jackson Cardiology Consultants in Jackson, Michigan. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to Your Heart is a production of McKibben Media Group and distributed by WKHM.